Welcome to the Negotiation in Real Life podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Davidson, and in this podcast, we'll explore the art and science of negotiation in real-world situations. Whether you're negotiating a business deal, asking for a raise, or trying to resolve a conflict with a colleague or loved one, negotiation is an essential skill that can help you achieve your goals and build better relationships. Through interviews with experts, real-life stories, and practical tips and techniques, we'll deep dive into the strategies and tactics that can make you a better negotiator. From understanding your own negotiation style, to reading body language, handling difficult conversations, and overcoming common challenges, this podcast will give you the tools you need to negotiate with confidence and achieve your objectives. So whether you're a seasoned negotiator looking to refine your skills or someone who's new to the game, join us as we explore the world of negotiation in real life. Today on the Negotiation in Real Life podcast, we are joined by Adam Montgomery from Four Tone Artists. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. I'm really excited to have you because obviously earlier in the year I did some work with the Victorian Music Development Office, and the music industry is not one that I've had heaps and heaps of experience in, but it is an area where there is lots of negotiations. Before we start talking about some of your negotiation experience, perhaps you'd like to give the listeners a bit of an idea about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, no worries at all. So my name's Adam Montgomery. I head up Four Tone Artists. Four Tone is a music live booking agency. So we represent a roster of artists and we look after and negotiate all their live performance appearances. So that ranges from all their touring to their festival appearances to any kind of private or corporate appearance they do, essentially anywhere they're on a stage or in front of people and there's a fee attached or some deliverables attached. We represent them in that space and look after all the terms around that performance.
Fantastic. So really interesting because that's definitely an area where you're negotiating in two directions. You're negotiating with the buyer or the venue, but also presumably having to negotiate occasionally with artists. And I imagine there's a fair degree of emotion comes into some of those negotiations.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, with our roster, I think currently sits at about 50 artists. So, and they're artists, you know, I say that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and as everyone knows, artists are emotional people and tend to be like, probably more in line with their emotions. And as an emotional being, and emotional responses are very important. So, absolutely. Yeah, very there's a lot to consider in every deal we're doing. It's not always just about what's the most money. It's that's quite often not the case. It's more there's a lot of other factors to consider, and it's not always black and white.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you think about some of the negotiations that you get involved in, what are some of the negotiations that are the most challenging for you?
I think the most challenging, it's a good question. I think when probably there's other factors involved, like quite often it's a simple festival fee. We want the artist to appear on this festival and the deal is fairly straightforward, performance fee, this amount of time. But I think there are elements where there might be events where there's additional deliverables. There might be social media requirements. There might be personal appearance fees. And I think that then complicates the deal and it becomes more a lot more nuanced, really. That becomes where there's a lot more thought and care to who the artist is, what their personality is like. Are they comfortable doing those additional deliverables? Do they like the meet and greets with the fans? Some do, some don't. So there's a lot more those sort of deals are certainly more more thought goes into them, you know, and it's more nuanced and tailored, I guess, for each individual artist.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's not copy and paste by any means.
Yeah. Now, obviously, negotiation is at the heart of what you do in your role. It's really, you know, doing deals for the artists. Have you ever had formal training in negotiation?
I've had absolutely no formal training, and it, honestly, would have been something that when I started nearly 10 years ago, I would have loved, really, because, you know, when I first started, I was playing music and in bands and an artist for quite a few years. So that sort of wound up, and then I was given a job at another agency, and it was basically just, here's a desk.
Yeah.
So, like, there was no training, no understanding of what's involved in doing a deal or negotiating a fee or whatever you are negotiating. It was I really had no idea what I was doing. So I was very much learning on the fly and, you know, making plenty of mistakes as you do. And that was my way of learning, really. Like,
yeah, and that is from the majority of people with negotiation, because there's actually a very small proportion of people who do get taught. What were some of the memorable moments or the memorable mistakes that you made along the way where you really took away a really important learning from them?
Yeah. I mean, obviously stacks, like, throughout the few years. But I guess early on, I'm still learning this definitely, but I think understanding that it's not just about the biggest amount of money you can get for the artist. There's more to it than that. And it's like, I think if you've got, depending on what your current situation is with your employer, as an agent, you might have hard targets or you might have KPIs or whatever that is. And I think early on, I was just very much focused on, I've got to hit that number. So I don't care if I burn someone. I don't care so much about the person on the other side of the negotiation. I really didn't, like, it wasn't something that I was mindful of or cognizant of. I was just like, most money, so I get ultimately, like, I can just, like,
commissions. Goes
well,
up.
Yeah, commission. I can just tick a box and, like, I've hit a number, and that is fine, and that's how you do the job. But I think, you know, as you would know, there's two people or always multiple parties in a negotiation, and I think that you want everyone to feel, or not even feel, everyone to be happy with the outcome, and I think that's something that I've learned more and more, because although there's a lot of people in the music industry, it's still a small industry, and I'm calling the same people I was 10 years ago who are now in powerful positions. I'm now running an agency. Like, it's so, the people you come up with, I realized quickly that these people are, you know, if they're good at what they do, they're going to be around in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And it's an ecosystem, and everyone, we need to look after each other. And it sounds cliched, but it kind of is the case, because without the venues, without the promoters, like, there's no agents to negotiate with, and I don't have a job. So, that was certainly a big learning curve. That it's not always about the most money. It's more about getting the best situation for the artist in a long term.
This is it, isn't it? Because, you know, I think it's that idea, as you said, it's a very small industry in reality. And if you've got a reputation for coming in and just being really aggressive on pricing and not being a particularly pleasant negotiator to deal with, those people are, your artists are actually going to suffer, because people won't want to come to you for an artist, because they go, there's other agents that are better to deal with. We can choose a different act to come on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and obviously we hear that from other, we've had plenty of artists come to us saying, there was 30 gigs that we didn't hear about because we didn't even get the opportunity to, because the promoter just can't deal with our agent or this particular person. It's not a pleasant experience. And, you know, like, no one wants to, it's a job, you know, like, it's a life, it's your life, but it's still a job, and no one wants to be unhappy doing their job, you know.
Yeah.
You ought to be, enjoy talking to people and pick up, like, so much of our work is on the phone. And, you know, you want to be able to call that person, that promoter, and be comfortable having a conversation anytime and not feel like, oh, you know, I've got to, like, backtrack here because I really burnt them on that last show. And, you know, and as much as it, like, pains me to say, like, there's not that many artists have really long careers. So quite a lot of people in the industry have long careers. So the artists do come and go, unfortunately, but a lot of the people who are working with the artists do stay. So they're around for years, you know. And
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I guess in some ways it almost creates a degree of conflict of interest with you as an artist, with you as an agent, because obviously you want to get the best for your artist, and particularly if you've got an artist who is going to have potentially a relatively short-term career, they want to maximize their gains for now.
Yeah.
But then when you're dealing, looking at sort of looking after all of your artists, you've got to not be too aggressive with any one artist or you potentially damage. How do you deal with that?
So that is a tricky one, because you're right. Like some artists do just want the massive payday. So, and as much as like we can influence the decision, ultimately, like they're the ones saying yes or no to the fee. Mm. So we're essentially negotiating on their behalf. So that is tricky. I think that's where you just have to be as personable and just kind of, I guess, bank on the fact that you're a good person in those, and people trust you, and you build trust with the person on the other side, whoever that is, whether that's the artist or whether that's the promoter. I think if you've got a situation where the artist trusts you implicitly, I think they'll know that you know the right thing to do, you know, and you're, even though this someone else might get a slightly higher fee than they did, the next year or in 2 years' time when that festival comes back around, that promoter is going to come to us because, you know, it was a fair deal.
Yeah.
And long term, it's a long term play, you know.
Yeah.
So, but like anything, it's tricky. You don't get it right all the time, and you know, sometimes, you know, it's always like still learning and still just trying to get the balance right.
Yeah.
many different strong personalities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quite often sit in the middle of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you are dealing, you talked about the importance of trust. Do you have any particular techniques or things that you do to help build that level of trust with the artists?
With the artists, I don't know if they're techniques as such. I think like it's probably not as, at least they're trying not to be as, what's the word? Like trying not to be as calculated as that, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's probably more just trusting in the history of what we've done with other artists, word of mouth of like, you know, other people, you know, suggesting us to the artists. It's quite a lot of word of mouth within the industry, yep, as you can imagine. And I think just, and the proof is in the work. So, yeah, it's sort of a tricky question to answer, but I think it's not maybe that well thought out, that trying to build that trust. It's more just it's in the actions or it's in the work.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best way to do it, because, you know, as agents, or I mean anyone in essentially a sales role, you do get good at telling people, like speaking, like you do, there's, it's a skill that you develop, yeah, how to sell something through. So I think just trying to just do that, but in the most sort of like authentic way, and just be genuine, because it's pretty easy to, you can talk a big game in, you know, when you're pitching for an artist, but if you don't back it up, you like, they'll quickly find another agent, which is, you know, which is what it is. So you kind of have to, the proof really is in the work, you know?
Yeah. So if there were people listening who are perhaps younger artist agents looking to develop their skills, what would be the top things that you would suggest to them to focus on to perhaps shortcut some of the learnings that you've had over your 10 years? What would be your top pieces of advice for them?
Yeah, I mean, specifically to music agents, I think this would apply. It would be to go out and like understand what's like a good business, like a good artist, who's got a good artist business, as in who can sell tickets, who's got a proper fan base. That's really important to understand, like having good ears and understanding, or a good understanding of like they might be a very cool band, and then like this particular group of people love them, but is there wider commercial appeal? Can you extrapolate that out to a bigger audience that's going to become a commercial, like viable in a commercial sense? So I think that's important to really understand a scene and understand the music scene and like what is good and cool, but what is commercial. And I think they can sometimes they marry up and that's the perfect kind of situation, but yeah. They don't. So I think it's having a good understanding of that. I think then there's elements of being an agent that don't really require like everyone can call a venue and get a booking on hold. Like that's not necessarily a tricky thing to do. But the relationship building is the hardest part. So just building your personal skills, I think, understanding how to talk to people and how to be respectful of different people and being like having a nuanced approach to when you're talking to a heavy band and understanding how to speak to those like a people in that band or a pop artist, and you know, understanding that they have different priorities and different goals, you know, and different goals. So just the personal skill is the one that is the most important, because you can't you could be the best agent in the world and you could get the most money ever, but if you don't have the artist to start with, you've got no business, or you don't have any agency, or you're not going to have a roster of artists. So you need to be able to sign an act, really. That's the really thing. And that comes down to understanding what that artist wants and how you can help be part of that team and how you can contribute to their career. And that takes time and just learning and being around it, and it just takes time, you know.
Yeah, I love that. And that idea about, you know, being not only being what the artist needs, but being who they need, and adapting the way that you speak to somebody depending on who they are and what they value and what they like. So you change your language, you can change your tone, you can even change, you know, if you're meeting in person, you might even wear different things for different people, because that's what you need to build trust.
Well, yeah, and also I think like having that ability to probably do that a little bit, but ultimately being, if you back yourself and you back yourself as at your core, you're the right person for that artist. I think that's really important. I think
I love it. And I think it is, you know, you've got to get that initial connection to do what you need to do to get that initial connection. And then once you've got that, you can be a bit more free. But if you don't hook them in at some point to say, actually, yes, I can see myself working with you.
Yeah. And it's not, and you don't always get it right. Like, it's not, and everyone's not for everyone, you know, like it's not, I don't think it's humanly possible to have everyone like you or everyone think that you're like, it's an unattainable like aspiration. I think people like, it's hard to hear, and like obviously everyone struggles with that, because you want to be liked as a you can't, and just I think being okay and you know, this is still something that me and like the team deal with, because you pitch for artists and don't get artists all the time, you know. That's just the reality of the job, and it's like you have to come to terms with that, otherwise it's just devastating all the time. You're just constantly like thinking that you're not as an agent or as a person, you're not good enough. So you just understand that it's okay to not be the right fit for every single situation, because you'd be spread so thin, I think. You'd be constantly compromising who you are as a person. And I think that's like not really a realistic kind of goal, you know?
I love that as a piece of advice, because I think, you know, it's such human nature to beat yourself up over every little thing that doesn't work out and goes wrong, and to actually give yourself permission to go, you know what, I didn't need to get that artist because that we just didn't have that chemistry. You know, there is a certain element of that human chemistry that's important, isn't it?
Absolutely. And like I'm hearing myself saying that, but knowing I still do it though. We still obviously it's human nature to really kind of like, you know, beat yourself up over it. But I think it's like to at least at some point after the fact, just reflect on that a little bit and go, it's okay, it's cool, it's fine. Like it's just okay.
And the thing I always say to people with that is, you know, you're going to have things that don't go right all the time. But I always say there's two really important questions. You know, that reflection piece that you've talked about there is really important, but you've got to have a little bit of structure sometimes to that reflection to go, okay, it's not just that I'm going to go, cool, it's okay, but I always look at it from two questions. One is, well, what did I do well in that conversation or in that process with this person? What was something that I did well, even though the end result wasn't what I wanted? What did I do well? And then what's one thing that I could do differently that maybe in the future might help me get something over the line that otherwise would have missed? And I think if you can just ask those sort of more specific reflective questions, you're giving yourself something positive, but you're also, you know, putting something in there that you can work on and develop as you go through the next series of negotiations.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Like, it's, again, it's like, it can be tricky to do because you're sort of having to face the fact that, like, okay, there are deficiencies, or not deficiencies, but there are like points in which you can get better, which is absolutely fine. But I think, it's important because you've got to learn from it, right? Like, that's how you learn.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, like you said, like initially at the start, there's not a lot of training. I'm not really sure of any formal training for being a music agent. Like, I really don't know if there's, I'm not aware of any, or if there is, it's not really a thing that people do. It's really a job that people just find themselves in, I think.
Yeah.
And you have to learn or take any kind of little bits you can, because it's not, there's no course on how to do it.
No, well, this is the interesting thing. So this is probably a good opportunity to plug the session that I did with the Victorian Music Development Office is available on the website for people. Yeah. So anyone in the area who's interested.
Was that with Tim and Lorray?
Yeah, that was with Tim and Lorray, who we did it. I sort of started with a bit of an overview of negotiation theory, and then we did a role play and some critiquing of things that worked well and things that could be done differently. So it was actually a really fun session. And Tim and Lorray, and for listeners who weren't at the session and don't know who Tim and Lorray are, they're fairly senior people in the music industry. One's a record label executive, and the other's a artist's agent, and they really got into things, so it was great fun.
Yeah, I work with both of them actually quite closely. Like Lorray, we represent a couple of her artists on her management roster, and Tim and I share a building in we're in the same office. So yeah, it's they're a good match, I think.
Yeah, and look, you know, it's interesting for me because obviously teaching negotiation, I have certain things that I do and certain styles. But it's also a good reminder for me sometimes to go, you know, the way that I teach is one way of doing it, but everyone will come up with their own style. And, you know, it was quite fascinating to see two people who are very experienced step into the hot seat in front of a room full of peers, but be so receptive to feedback as well. And I think that's one of the really important things is, as you said, you never stop learning how to negotiate.
Yeah.
You can always develop those skills, and there is no such thing as a perfect negotiator. So it's just really about taking the time to step back and go, what did I actually do there in that negotiation? You know, what was it that actually was going on? Am I just on autopilot, which I think most of us do? We sort of get into that autopilot mode when we do the same kind of negotiation over and over again. And coming off autopilot, going back to say, oh, what was I doing? Why did I do it that way? Could I have done it differently? What would be the impact? Is the best way to continue learning and developing.
Yeah, I mean, funnily enough, like having I've got a four-year-old, and I find that it sounds really strange, but there's obviously a lot of negotiation at that age between four and and it's everything's in negotiation, and it's interesting having being in that. Because their brain's obviously working differently, and everything's quite literal. So it's a different, I find that to be kind of almost, or probably potentially more challenging at times, because you have to, you have to think of it from a different perspective. And it's like, it's a real learning curve for me, like coming from doing that at work every day to coming home and still like being in that same kind of like conversations about whatever they may be. But thinking about it in a different way, it's been kind of weirdly, it's been helpful.
I think that's really, really interesting to note. And, you know, just to put any worries aside, even the experts at Harvard say never negotiate with terrorists and children. so don't worry if it's hard, because, I mean, and it is from a cognitive development perspective, their brains just aren't in the same place. But I think anything that gets you to stop and reflect on what you're doing and gives you new ways of thinking about things is a really valuable experience.
Yeah, because they're not thinking about it like you are in, which might be a very practical kind of like, no, but you have to do it this way because it makes so much sense. Then that's not how obviously their brain is working at that point, and it's refreshing. So you have to kind of, you have to come at a different angle that's really thinking about how they're, what their needs are and how they're going to respond. And I think, just as a general rule, I think that's kind of like not a bad place to be starting when talking about negotiations, to sort of come full circle on it, is like, how is it going to work for the other person? You know, like that's, you know, like how are we going to both walk away, you know, feeling good about whatever happened, you know, whether that's a four-year-old or whether that's the head of, you know.
I love that as a sort of great piece of advice. Start every negotiation going, how are they going to feel? I love it. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Adam, I've really enjoyed our conversation about this. If people wanted to get in touch with you, if they were interested in learning more about what you do, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah, that would just send me an email, which is just adam@fortone.com.au.
Fantastic.
Or the Fortone website, there's contact details and info and all that on there.
Excellent. Anyone looking for a new artist can try and have a look at who you've got on your books and get in touch. Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cool. Thanks, Nicole. I appreciate it.
That's all for this episode of the Negotiation in Real Life podcast. I hope you enjoyed our discussion and learned something new that you can apply in your own negotiations. Remember, negotiation is a skill that can be developed and refined over time. So keep practicing and pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can find us on social media or email us directly. And if you liked this episode, please leave us a review on your favourite podcast platform. It helps us to reach more people and continue to produce high-quality content. Until next time, keep negotiating in real life.